I wonder, did the pain start when she was still small? Or did it come on more recently, powerfully, all at once? How long has this mother watched her daughter writhe at home, tormented by demons that no one can see? Whatever the case, this woman has no control, no power. She is stuck in a terrible place. Have you ever held a child in pain? Have you ever held them while they ache or while they fight a night terror or while they suffer quietly through a long illness? It is an awful place to be stuck. This mother must have exhausted her options. It's odd that she's coming for help alone. Usually the father would go or a brother. And so maybe her husband is gone. She is culturally Greek, but a member of the ethnic group that is the owning class in that region, the group that oppresses the Jews there, who are mostly poor farmers. Given that, it's not such a surprise that Jesus reacts to her harshly. But this hybrid identity doesn't guarantee her any real status, especially if she has no husband, no brother, no son. We know little about her, but we know that her daughter is in pain. And this mother, as yet, has found no way out. Jesus is stuck. Also, this is not a flattering story to preserve in Scripture. Just last week, an Alsosian tried to stump Phil and me. She shared that she was asked at a dinner party recently why she would follow Jesus when he was racist. And she cited this story. Well, preacher, it's a nasty thing he says, calling her a dog. It's mean. Some people work really hard to explain it away, defending Jesus as perfect, saying that he's testing her, or that it's a teaching moment for the disciples, or that it really didn't sound that bad back then. I disagree. He calls her a dog. Right? He says that healing her daughter does not matter as much as healing the people of Israel. That hurts. I think the man is stuck. We say that he's fully human, which means that he was born in a particular time and place and culture. Even as the Son of God, Jesus is shaped by these influences. In this moment, he can't see beyond what he's understood to be his mission for Israel. He struggles to see this woman as anything other than party to the oppressor. And he's exhausted. He's caught in this swirl of never-ending demands. He's stuck, and he lashes out. And it's ugly. And we get stuck, too. Deeply stuck sometimes, all but debilitated. That's where a friend of mine found herself not too long ago. I'll call her Carrie. There is no crisis point for her. Instead, she was slowly being pulled down by a deadening job. She worked at a nonprofit that otherwise seemed upstanding, but little by little, Carrie began to recognize that her boss was abusive, that he was gaslighting her, that her relationships with some of the coworkers there or toxic. Their voices began to get into her head, warping her own narrative, convincing her that the gifts she had to bring had no place there. Now, the job was not all bad. There were people she loved. She believed in the work. But last spring, she realized that it felt like her soul was dying there. Carrie was stuck. But that's never all there is. Not for us, not in this gospel. Out of this pain, the Syrophoenician woman moves. Something pulls her to her feet, compels her to run out of this house, to seek out this man. She's heard something about him, some clamoring. Maybe she overheard the crowds murmuring about his teaching, about how he'd healed another Gentile with demons, driving them straight into a herd of pigs. Maybe it was worth investigating. She had nothing left to lose. So she allows herself to be stirred by this unlikely spark of hope. It doesn't faze her that the first ask doesn't bring success. She's used to nothing working. Now, in the parallel story in Matthew's gospel, we're told that it's the woman's faith that makes her daughter well. But not here. She just digs in her heels, lobbing clever words right back at Jesus. It is her word, he says, her logos, that shifts everything. In the beginning was the word. He hears her. Something jostles, grinds maybe. Truth starts to ring between his ears. He catches a glimpse of something new, something more, and then movement. This holy, massive, earth-shattering movement. It's not just that this woman opens his mind. It's not just that Jesus heals her daughter. It's that he had asserted that this healing was for the people of Israel, first and foremost. She teaches him to see that it is for everyone. She shows him that there is enough to go around, that even the crumbs will sow life. And Jesus pivots. He opens himself. He is unstuck by this woman's word, set free to free others. This is his incarnation, this opening up. In this story, we see how fully human Jesus was, messing up, putting his foot in his mouth, bound by his time and his culture. He knows what it is like to be one of us. And right there, we see his divinity crashing in. He sees and hears and opens himself up to a greater truth. In this exchange, Jesus embodies that fulcrum, swinging between humanity and divinity, from absolute stuckness into possibility. Be opened. That's what he goes on to pray. Be opened. This is what we seek to follow. This is what we yoke our lives to. The possibility of possibility. The trust that something might move. I believe it. It's happened to me, and I see it unfolding with my friend Carrie right now. And she was really stuck. It wasn't just the job that was soul-crushing. At the same time, Carrie was going through a divorce. She has two young children. How do you leave your job without the next one, when there are mortgage payments and childcare bills and all the rest? Carrie visited out here a while back when she was deep in discernment about what to do with all this mess. She went on a retreat up at the Bishop's Ranch in Sonoma County and went hiking there. Way out in the hills, she saw the trail diverge ahead of her. She had no map and could not make out where either path would lead. She could only see that they headed in very different directions. This was how she got unstuck, she told me. She was looking at her life, and she looked at these trails, and she decided that she would not try to figure out how to make it down the whole path at once, or even where either path would end up. She just opened herself and took the next step, and then the next, and then one more. And going home, that's what she did. Like the Syrophoenician woman and like Jesus, Carrie listened and looked for the possibility of healing and then opened herself up. A conversation with her boss, giving notice, no job in hand yet. Her house sold, not knowing where they'd land after her mother's place. She's just moved to a new city now. And it's not what she expected, but after several months now without a paycheck, she's really close to locking in a new job. But it's more than that. As I listened to her recounting the wilds of these last few months, her voice didn't crack with exhaustion or fear or sadness. All I could hear was how free she is, and how alive. She told me how she used to be stuck. She told me that she has chosen wholeness instead, that she's chosen freedom. Here are three people who were stuck, who reached out and found more life. Here is a hope that is real, a word that insists on freedom. And here is your invitation to rise and to take that one first step. Friends, what if we're not as stuck as we think? What if we can yoke ourselves to this incarnation once again, pivoting towards the word that opens us up and sets us free? What would happen if we claim the word that demands healing, that insists that this goodness is for all of us? What if you're not stuck? How then would you live?